I think there was a study done in 2015 where basically they compared a bunch of countries that had gone off fluoride in the water and countries that still had fluoride in the water, and the decay rates were approaching the same point. So basically, what does that mean? It means that a lot of these studies that were done previously, maybe they need to be reexamined. But secondly, I think it's more that we have all these fluoridated toothpaste and topical agents that we're constantly using. It could just be that fluoridating the water in certain areas might not be as effective as we really want it to be.
This is the Entrepology Podcast, the podcast where we optimize the bodies, brains, and lifestyles of entrepreneurs, go-getters, and world-changing innovators.
Welcome to the Entrepology Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Megan Walker. As a naturopathic doctor and anthropologist, I optimize the health and performance of badass women working to change the world as entrepreneurs and go-getters. You know, people exactly like you. Your business, body, balance, and inner badass, these are the themes we are exploring. Before we jump into the interview, I want to invite you to join our free Facebook community, Legacy. If you want to be something amazing, you need to surround yourself with amazing people. The Legacy community is made up of badass women living, not leaving, but living our legacy every single day. We are leaders, parents, entrepreneurs, and innovators collectively committed to leaving the world better than we found it. My mission is to support the health and optimization of these badass superheroes, literally to places we never thought imaginable. If you are on a mission and get it that your health is the key to your unlimited potential, then join us. We are super awesome. You can find us on Facebook at www.facebook.com/groups/DE Legacy. See you there. So there's really nothing worse than feeling like you are in your total confident element. You're walking into a meeting and at the very last minute, you realize you likely have the worst breath in the whole world. I know you didn't think I was necessarily going there. Today's guest is an expert in understanding those pieces. Ryan Nolan is a dental materials scientist. And before you decide, I'm not necessarily sure this is about me, the thing I love about Ryan's story and what I enjoyed so much about this interview is it's another beautiful intersection between medicine and entrepreneurship. The aha moment for Ryan came late at night while doing research in his apartment, and it dawned on him that silver could penetrate plaque. We often hear about silver being used as an antimicrobial, and that's what Ryan was studying. He was studying chemistry. He was at school in Chicago, and it occurred to him, we've got this plaque in our mouth. It's known as a biofilm. So a biofilm is maybe a term that you've heard me throw around before. And he's like, silver can penetrate biofilms. What if we could leverage silver to start to get calcium through biofilms so that we could actually increase the health of the enamel in the mouth? And this might not be the kind of late night thinking that would occur to you or I, but it is so interesting and cool that it occurred to Ryan, because what he realized is that his hypothesis was in fact true. The next day, Ryan borrowed $300 from his classmate, Matt Callister, to buy testing supplies. They tested the concept on the cell on themselves, and they realized that it actually worked. And so these realizations segued Ryan into a career where he started to learn more about biofilms, plaque, and the intersection between what's happening in our mouth and its systemic influences on our own health. We're going to get way beyond bad breath, and what we're going to start to talk about is how oral care, way beyond what you've ever been taught before, actually has lasting and pervasive influences on your health overall. You will never forget to brush your teeth again. It is my pleasure to introduce you to Ryan Nolan. Ryan Nolan, welcome to the Entrepology Podcast.
Hey, thanks. Thanks for having me. Appreciate you having me on.
Well, I'm really excited to jump into this conversation because it's just so different from anything that I have any knowledge of. And I always find those to be such fascinating conversations. But can you just give us a little bit of your background and your story? Because I actually find your story so compelling and so interesting. How'd you get here?
Oh, yeah, for sure. So, my background's chemistry, basically specialize in nanotechnology. So I've done everything from carbon nanotubes to silver and gold and all sorts of different applications, you name it, I've probably touched it, right? So I got interested in dental school actually my senior year of college. I decided I didn't want to be an engineer. That was the track I was kind of heading down. And so I was like, you know what? I'm really good with my hands. I really want to do something artistic and I want to help people. And so I went to dental school and I loved it, loved every second of it. But then after I kind of got into the field, I started realizing, man, the research in this field is just in such dire need of improvement. Some of the products that we've got on the market are just not addressing a lot of the issues that we have clinically. And so then the kind of like chemical, you know, engineering type mind kind of came in and said, what if you do this? Or what about this? And so then I started going down the route of, you know, just testing different things, right? And just seeing how things work, because that's just how I am. I'm an analytical. But I ended up discovering some really cool stuff. And we did some trials and figured out that, hey, we have something novel, and applied for a patent. And then I got a interview with a manufacturer and they were all on board. And so here I am. So I work full time for my own company, which I do basically plaque, all sorts of research, but mostly focused on altering biofilms. All that stuff that goes on your teeth after you have sugar, that's what we study. And we basically try and manipulate it. That's essentially what we do.
And so I'm curious about that because I look at biofilms a lot in my practice as well. And before we jump into it, can you just explain, because I know those people are like, that's great, guys. I don't know what a biofilm is. Can you explain what a biofilm is?
Yeah. So a biofilm is a matrix of proteins, bacteria, and in this case in the oral microbiome is saliva and a couple of other different like enzymes and other things. But mostly it's protein and bacteria. So basically think about it like a Tetris stack, right? Bacteria are going to flood to the tooth. They're going to attach to the tooth and then they're going to stack themselves like little Tetris pieces until you have something visible, which is plaque, right? And that's kind of the best way to explain it. It's just it's a mutual home that different bacteria have come together to build.
Well, good for them for working as a team. you know, the part that always fascinates me about health is how we evolved along with these microbial systems. And so, you know, we've got all this technology that we're applying to oral health these days. And the thing that's occurring to me as you're describing this is like, are there clues from ancestrally how we evolved that provide us with insight in terms of how we actually should be caring for our mouth? Because we're a far cry from like chewing on wood to using Crest every night. Like what are we learning from those ancestral patterns?
So it's interesting that you mentioned that. It's debated at what, you know, increment, but I think it was like 11 or 12,000 years ago we started eating more grain, right? Mm-hmm. And actually we have evidence to suggest that along with that increase in carbohydrate consumption, there is obviously changes in disease patterns, right? And namely one of them is dental disease, right? It's kind of a stark contrast. But basically even too, we have, you know, I'm sure you're familiar with an enzyme called amylase, which is actually in your saliva. Mm-hmm. And that's actually designed to start breaking down carbohydrates quicker. Well, it turns out, like I said, about 11 or 12,000 years ago, the average person has about 60 times more amylase than our ancestor prior to that. I mean, we literally, our bodies just, the second we started eating primarily carbohydrates, our bodies picked up on it quickly. The form and function of these changes is that when you look back far enough and we look at the well-preserved dental tartar, I know it sounds gross, right? We actually see different microbial patterns than we do now. And one of the things I'd like to do actually is to start tracking these. I think there's probably about 14 or 15 of them. It's hard to say, but we're starting to look into tracking patterns of different kinds of microbiomes. So basically what that means in a layman's terms is we're looking for patterns in the population right now that suggest your risk level. Because if you start looking back, you know, ancestrally, we didn't have these really unclean diets. And I'm sure you'll agree, things are just a lot worse. The quality of food has gone way down, way, way, way down. The availability has gone up, but you know, the quality has gone down. And so what we're actually seeing, and hopefully this answers your question, is we're seeing a lot more disease now than we have. Even if you look at the historical accounts, the only people who had real disease, we basically was a rich man's disease, is how we look at it, right? Like decay was a rich man's disease. Unless you had access to sugar crops and all this other stuff, it just wasn't happening, right? And so it's only really the last 100, 200 years that we've really seen just huge jumps in dental disease. So hopefully that answers your question.
Yeah, so now I'm just going to geek out on this, because two questions that I'm curious about, and I know we're really in our infancy in terms of drawing conclusions from microbiome research, so in no way do I think any of us are in a position to draw clinical conclusions around these pieces. With that said, it's just super cool. Two questions on that. One is, are you starting to, in terms of the patterns of I'm going to say microbial ratios in people's mouths, are you able to draw linear associations to like testing related to gut microbiome? So are you seeing any connection between the two of those?
So we started looking into that. A lot of researchers, much better than I, have started looking, but there is a downstream effect. So we know, and it's still debated. I actually had someone come on my show and we kind of disagreed on one topic, which is, I personally think that you are constantly saturating your gut with your oral microbiome. And the reason I know this is because you swallow every 4 seconds. And his argument was that stomach acid would destroy everything, so there wouldn't be a connection. And I go, well, if that's the case, then why would we see some of these correlations where, you know, and look, I don't have, it's more anecdotal than systemic. But let's put it this way. I have had patients with oral microbiome issues that once we fix them, all of a sudden their gut issues are gone within a couple of weeks. It's not a shock. Like, it's kind of one of those things where if we know that the mouth is out of control, the mouth seeds the gut, right? So it's the first domino in a series of dominoes. Some of the bacteria that cause, that release toxins and that cause rheumatoid arthritis, they occur in the mouth. Some of the bacteria that cause oversensitivity to certain foods, they occur in the mouth. There's even reports now of a bacteria which is, it primarily likes to eat sugar. And when people overconsume sugar and they're swallowing, they're seeding their gut with this bacteria. And that bacteria actually can influence our own endocrine system to want you to have more sugar, to keep it alive down there, because there's not enough. You know, otherwise it would get outcompeted and it would be a disaster for it. So there's a lot of evidence to suggest that the gut is directly impacted by your oral microbiome. And that just makes sense. It's downstream, right?
Yeah, it totally makes sense to me. And as a clinician, I mean, I feel like a lot of the ways that we collect microbial sampling are moderately invasive.
Yes.
And I'm really fascinated, you know, to see whether we start to see correlations and predictors in oral health that can help us understand what's going on further downstream, because I think we'll just see higher compliance from patients in terms of wanting to look into these pieces. So I'm super fascinated in that generally. And maybe you can speak to the notion of like the types of patterns that you see in terms of dysfunction in the mouth and how that actually has systemic effects. We know that inflammation in the mouth is related to cardiovascular disease, and I've read things related to increased risk of breast cancer when you've had root canals. Like, can we unpack that a little bit?
Yeah. It's kind of crazy if you start thinking about it, right? Because to think that your mouth, I mean, everybody's for the longest time always said, oh, it's a separate field. And it always makes me so upset when I get people in medicine who won't recognize that this is these things are all linked, right? Your body is linked. And so if you have problems in your mouth, you're likely going to have problems in other places in your body, right? So you mentioned the link for, you know, heart health. So we know there's some bacteria, spirochetes in particular, that occur in the mouth. And they actually can get into your bloodstream. They can lodge themselves in your arteries and they can cause atherosclerosis. That link has actually been definitively studied and agreed upon. So there is a direct correlation. Then there's other things like, you know, technically, if you have periodontal disease, your risk for preterm labor can go up as high as I think it was 83% in a recent study. So people who don't have periodontal disease in comparison might only have a 10 to 13% risk of preterm labor, where someone who has severe periodontal disease has about an 83% chance of preterm labor. And so we know this really all comes down to the question of threshold values. So you talked a lot about, how do we look at a microbiome and how do we assess risk value, right? We want to look at someone and say, okay, if I give you this test, I want to place you in a risk category so that I know that if I'm a doctor, I know I'm doing everything I can to help this patient, right? And so understanding and diagnosing are huge, especially if you can catch this stuff early on, because sometimes you might have a patient that's not displaying clinical symptoms or complaining, but might have a problem. But yeah, so we can actually do a lot of salivary testing now that we weren't able to do 5 or 10 years ago. And we can actually look at threshold values where we know if a certain bacteria is above a threshold, it's actually going to cause disease. And specifically, we're looking at a range between periodontal disease and decay. Typically, individuals are on one scale or the other. They're not usually in the middle. There's very few individuals in the middle where, like, they don't have a risk for either. You're usually either going to have a high risk for decay, or I should say you're going to be on the spectrum of risk for decay, or the risk for periodontal disease. But both the organisms, or I should say the organisms that cause each, all of them have health implications for either your heart health, brain health, you know, digestion, cardiovascular health. So, I mean, even your blood pressure, it's kind of crazy. So even you might think, oh, well, I'll get a cavity, but I'll never have this. Don't count yourself out, because a lot of these microbes do influence the rest of your body in different ways. So hopefully that answers your question there too, because it's kind of a exploratory topic as it is. But yeah, it's got a lot of research coming out right now, a lot.
I think all of these pregnant women listening to the podcast are like, I got to go see my dentist.
Yeah. You know what? Just to add an addendum to that, I will say this. The studies are showing that women who take xylitol supplements or xylitol rinses or chewing gum actually had a decreased risk for preterm labor. And it was very significant. So just FYI, if you're listening and you're wondering whether you should be supplementing with something, xylitol is what you want.
Well, and xylitol, I use xylitol orally all the time because we know that it will break up biofilms.
Yes, that's correct. Yeah, there's a lot of studies on that. It's great stuff.
We came full circle. Yeah, one question as you're talking that I just found really interesting, and you may not know anything about it, but I'll just throw it out there, is one of the things that I will look at clinically is we'll often study salivary hormones. So we can actually get a sense of active hormonal states, so bound hormones, but they'll pass through the salivary gland. So we can get really interesting measurements of progesterone and estrogen by testing salivary hormones. And I'm just curious whether that's ever something that you've looked at in your literature or people are commenting on that. Like if we're talking about preterm labor and periodontal disease,
right.
I'm curious whether or not we see direct correlations to hormonal environments that also speak to that risk factor or change the microbiome in the mouth.
Yeah, so definitely, yes, we are looking into it. Hormones do cause changes, not only locally, but also anywhere there's, you know, receptors and things going on, right? And so the mouth is an active place. So we do see that hormones affect all sorts of things, everything from periodontal disease, your inflammatory factors, gingivitis. So basically, you know, it's funny because in dentistry, we always talk about this idea of it's more important how your immune system reacts to an insult than the actual insult itself. And so it's funny because when you're undergoing hormonal changes, pregnancy gingivitis is a common thing. Whereas, these women, they come in, they're pregnant, they freak out because they have like what looks to be a tumor like on their gums. And it's actually an overreaction of the immune system. And so hormonal levels do play an impact in acceleration of disease because they affect a lot of the cellular processes and stuff like that. So there is a lot of research that goes into looking at different hormone levels and just observing the results of the disease process, because if you're already at high risk for disease, you have to be extra careful, especially with your hygiene and everything like that, to make sure that things don't get worse, if that makes sense. But I'm not a hormone expert, but I do see in my practice, like women who are pregnant or even kids who are going through puberty and all of a sudden mom comes in, why does little Johnny have bleeding gums all the time now? Right. Well, he just turned 13, you know? So yeah, so that's really the extent of my knowledge on the topic. But yes, we do look at hormone levels and they are significant on disease process.
Or I was going to say, little Johnny hasn't eaten a vegetable for 3 months.
Yeah, that too.
One or the other. I did have a patient once come in with scurvy, legit.
Really?
Yeah, it was. She was a referral from a physician. He's like, I don't know what's wrong with this woman. Like, I can't figure it out. And then I ran a diet diary because that's what I do. And I was like, you haven't had vitamin C in like 4 months. She ate potatoes. That's all she ate was potatoes. So you know what? These things tend to they tend to pop up. I think most of us are used to seeing a dentist, and I hope we are. And when we go in, we get x-rays, and they clean our teeth, and then they tell us to come back in 6 months, and we do our thing. And I suspect we could probably be a little bit more sophisticated in terms of not only the oral hygiene that we do on our own, but what happens in the dentist, but like our assessment of oral health. Can you just take us through a little bit of like what is sort of cutting edge? What should we be looking for in terms of progressive dental evaluations? And then let's talk about what we can be doing on our own in terms of hygiene.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. So, you know, obviously I do work kind of on the cutting edge. We're looking at a lot of different testing. So I think if I'm a patient and I really want to know, and trust me, I even have patients that they know I know things and they'll come in and I'll specifically say, hey, I want this test, right? And they know that I offer that, but not everyone does. And so sometimes patients want like more microbiome testing. And so what we'll do is we'll actually go through the full panel. We can look at all the immune factors, risks for inflammation. We can look at genetic predispositions for things. We can look at the threshold values of certain bacteria. And then, what I can do is I can take those tests and I can say, okay, I want you on this hygiene regimen for 6 weeks and I want you to come back and we're going to retest and we're going to see where these levels are, right? So I mean, I think the advancements that we're going to see in prevention are going to be earlier diagnostics, less expensive diagnostics for some, like stuff like this. Maybe 10 years ago, it might've cost $10,000 and now it costs about $100. So, I mean, you can see that it's actually, things are happening and I'm sure as a doctor, you appreciate that, you know, being able to more widely available testing that's more cost efficient is going to be changing the game, right? So yeah, salivary testing is a big thing. Plaque testing itself is still a little tricky. So, you know, depending on the actual kind of equipment that you have available, I have pretty fancy equipment that I can use. So I think testing will be a big thing. My expertise, I guess, is nanotechnology, and it's kind of like one of those things where not many people even really talk about it, but I make plant-based nanoparticles. So that is a brand new science.
Stop it. That's so cool.
Yeah. So it's a brand new science, and it's not exactly like, it's funny because you try and have conversations with your colleagues about it, and they're like, I don't know why you got that result, but I'm not going to hate you for it because I couldn't explain why you got it. Like, it's just a very, it's an exploratory science at the moment. So what we do is we take plant compounds and we use them to make nanoparticles. It's pretty, wicked and wild. And, we're seeing some crazy cool results. We do experiment with different things. And, I'm a big fan of plants, right? So I didn't even know, like, for a while I was like, oh, am I really going to get into this? This field is no, like, it's like so difficult because, like I said, there's only probably like two people in the Western United States who know what I'm talking about. But it's like, it's a very, very cool thing. And we think it's going to be a big deal for impacting oral care, keeping risk levels low, addressing some of the core problems that people have with our hygiene, right? So yeah. So that's what I'm thinking. Everything's going.
So if we can be that cool and that sophisticated in what we do from an assessment perspective, what are some of the innovations that we should know about as consumers with respect to oral hygiene? Like, I go to a lot of conferences and I feel like, one, people are always trying to hand me a toothbrush, which is kind of new. I've never actually had that happen before. And two, I'm seeing a ton of things like
oil pulling and activated charcoal toothpaste? And like, how do we differentiate fact from fiction?
Yeah. So look, there's been a history of disinformation. I'm just gonna point that out.
No way.
All right. So let's just back up for a minute, right? So for a long, long, long time, and don't get me wrong, I am not I invent what I invent because I know not everyone is going to go out and eat plants. Okay. I know not everyone is gonna have a clean diet. The modern diet is a disaster. We have a so the NIH released a statistic that people from the ages of 20 to 64, 92% of them have decay or have had decay. So the prevalence rate's 92%. It's the most treatable, preventable disease that still has that high of a prevalence level. I mean, it's actually a big problem, right? And so the issue is that everyone's like, okay, well, you know, if we just address this, it's going to fix it. If we just address this, it's going to fix it. Well, the truth is the reason why you get decay and why a lot of people have hygiene problems is because of all the acid in their diet. And not just the acid in their diet, but the acid that's produced as a result of eating these sugars and things like that. So basically, it starts out as a bacterial imbalance because of what you're eating. And so if you're not eating clean food and you're eating mostly carbs and all these simplified, you know, sugars, your microbiome is going to be very, very acidic. And it's going to cause a ton of issues. So, you know, as far as some of these products go, this is what happened. This is kind of why I even do what I do. Things have to be alkaline for them to work, right? So like our whole system, right? So even our blood, I think, is like a pH of 7.6. Well, it turns out the ideal pH that your saliva wants to be, if it could be there all the time, is 7.6. Why are we not shocked? I mean, we've looked into this a million times, but basically if your saliva is not alkaline, what happens is things start getting acidic, and then the bacteria that like the acidic conditions multiply and thrive. And then you end up with this like really bad microbiome for an extended period of time. And it's just an epic disaster. You know, as far as some of these other products like the clays and the charcoals, I really wanted to like clays. And then what I did is I started testing them, and what I found out is a lot of them have lead contamination.
Okay.
That was what turned me off of that. Charcoal is a little too abrasive for me. Depending on the brand, some of them aren't as bad, but when they activate it, it actually kind of changes the pore sizes of the charcoal, and so actually can make it really abrasive. And so it's a physical process. So basically you're just scraping your teeth with something that's a little too abrasive. So I try and tell patients if they are going to use it for whitening, try and only use it once a week. So if you're really vain, like myself, don't use it super, super often, and just be really wary of the brand that you get, because you want to make sure they've done all the proper, testing. I mean, I've actually tested one of these companies that actually had a lead count as high as 20 parts per million. To give you an idea, California standards are 0.6.
And is that clay or that's charcoal?
It's clay. It's a clay charcoal product. So it's a combo. Oh. They tend to be made in combination with each other. So I wouldn't be able to tell you whether or not that was from the clay or the charcoal, but I can tell you the product had 20 parts per million in it. So it's way above. It's way, way above what we would consider even, like, just to give you an idea, like, you know, the facility I work at, if we saw levels like that, we would shut down the line. Like, it would be like that serious, right? But it's just a matter of just because it's natural doesn't mean that it's safe. And so I always tell patients, like, just be really careful of some of these crazy things that come out with claims. So again, I think without getting too derailed, I think the future of hygiene products, and you know, I'm pretty biased, is nanotechnology. We're going to start seeing incorporations of better compounds. The reason why I like the plant-based compounds is because they're more biocompatible, they're safe. They don't have the same downsides that the chemically or the physically made ones have. And so we're starting to see just way better results and way safer results and less side effects. I mean, some of these prescription rinses that people take, I mean, they're just full of side effects, and it's just like, man, there's got to be something better, and there is. So it is coming down the pipeline, and it's just a matter of time.
And is there a way for us to whiten our teeth without destroying our oral microbiome?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think that the thing is there are safe ways to whiten your teeth. There's a lot of hydrogen peroxide products. I would say this though, if you generally speaking want to whiten your teeth, I think probably the most effective way to do it without feeling like you're going to harm them is just good old fashioned baking soda, to be honest with you. So, I mean, it sounds stupid, but I found that has helped me the most. And it's alkaline, right? So it makes sense. I think obviously, you know, everyone probably gets professional whitening at some point. I don't like the Zoom products. They're just a line of like basically lights that go along with the bleaching. I'm really against those because they just dry your teeth out, which is not good. But generally speaking, I would only get professional whitening like once a year. So that's what I'd recommend to people. And like I said, if you're going to use a charcoal product, just use it once a week. Don't use it every day, three times a day. I have had patients come in that used chronically used a charcoal product and ended up having to get veneers because of all the damage that was done. Yeah, they basically wore away their entire enamel. So just be careful with those because, you know, as much as I like white teeth, I also like keeping my teeth. So,
be the priority.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah.
And what about oil pulling? Have you seen any in your research? What's the research behind oil pulling?
So oil pulling is a little interesting. So basically,
and for people who don't know it, maybe let's just give them a background on what that is.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. So there's some upsides and downsides to oil pulling. So oil pulling is the process of usually using MCT oil, so like a pretty purified version of coconut oil, and rinsing around in your mouth for 30 minutes. That's the recommended amount of time.
30 minutes.
30 minutes. I know, isn't that kind of like blow your mind? That, hey, if I just tell patients this. I go, look, if you're willing to rinse with this for 30 minutes, you're probably going to have good hygiene. Because you care enough to do it. Because a big problem for us, and I'm sure for you, is compliance. You know, you give someone something and they won't do it.
Yeah.
But look, I'm like, look, man, if you're willing to rinse with this for 30 minutes, God bless you. I'm more than happy to have you. Whatever gets you excited about your hygiene, I'm happy to do it. There is research suggesting that coconut oil does have medium chain and short chain fatty acids in it, which are antimicrobial. I have seen research saying that it does reduce some of the threshold values of some of the bacteria in your mouth, which is good. I've seen the most improvement with patients that use it for their gums more than anything else. Not really their teeth. It doesn't really do anything for your teeth, but it does seem to reduce some inflammation in the gums. That's what I've personally clinically observed. Like I said, some of the research does show antimicrobial action, for some of these bad bacteria. I think the most important thing I have to say is I think it's more of a compliance issue for me. So like I don't recommend it to patients that I know aren't going to want to spend the 30 minutes doing it. But if you're an enthusiast and you really like coconut oil and that's your thing, then look, you're not going to do any harm to yourself. And frankly, it's probably going to be okay for your gums. So I have nothing against it.
Okay, this question has been in the back of my mind for a long time, but I don't want to offend my dentist by asking it, so I'm going to ask you.
Yeah, so go ahead.
Do we really need to see someone every 6 months? Is there research to support that I come in every 6 months, or is that just like, because I've been told that since I was a kid, so I feel like we have better data related to that now.
Yeah. So, okay. So you may or may not know this, but someone who has like periodontal disease, for example, right? We like to have them in every 3 months. And so you're probably like scratching your head, what the hell? Every 3 months? Like, that doesn't make any sense. So the reason is because there's this shifting that occurs in your biofilm. So basically, when you're higher risk, shifting happens more often. So this is actually something called the ecological plaque hypothesis. So basically what happens is depending on your individual risk, and we look at the individual risk based on, so I could take some of your plaque and your saliva, and then I could actually test it, and then I could get it back to you and say, Dr. Walker, you know, you're high here in these three areas, your commensal bacteria is good here, but we need to improve these three, right? And then I could put you in a risk category, and I could determine, you know what, in this looks like this biofilm is more likely to shift within 3 months. So when I say shift, it usually means into a negative situation. So it keeps getting worse and worse and worse. So yes, there is research to suggest that if you have periodontal disease, your biofilm is more likely to shift in a sense to cause damage every 3 months, meaning that it can cause accelerated disease faster than the average person. The average person takes about 6 months to develop a very, very, very bad biofilm. So it's more rooted in the idea of this early. Now you probably could really get more targeted with it now that we have better technology. Like, you know, maybe it's every 7 months for one individual, where it might be every 4 months, but just to keep things more consistent, basically the idea is such that, you're going to develop more issues if you don't go in every 6 months, than if you just didn't go in at all. So we're trying to understand how plaque develops over time and becomes more pathogenic. And it seems for the average individual that takes about 6 months, whereas for higher risk individuals, really it takes about 3 months. And we've noted this too with something called, I don't know if you've ever seen someone with braces and they get them off and they have these white spots on their teeth, right? Mm-hmm. So white spot lesions actually take 6 months to occur on average. Mm-hmm. 90 to 95% of white spot lesions occur within the first 6 months of getting like braces. So to give you an idea, that's where the majority of the risk and threshold occurs, which is why, you know, like someone who might have braces, we might get them in every 3 or 4 months, because their hygiene is going to be a lot worse and they're going to miss a lot of stuff. So yes, it is based on, research for sure.
You have sold me. I'm good with that. For the longest time, I was like, did someone do a really fabulous business course at some point? And then dentists just started doing it. Cause it's not a field that I necessarily know a ton about, but I appreciate that. One last question for you about the steps that we can be taking as individuals in terms of our own oral care, brushing our teeth and flossing. Like, these are the things we're always told to do. Are those the same instructions you give your patients?
So I kind of changed a little bit over time. I want people to pick up habits, right? Because they're not going to have the discipline to floss. So what I tell them is, I say, look, just do it a couple of times a week, because I know you're not going to do it every day. I just know you're not going to do it. But here's what happens. They'll do it maybe once a week. And then if you can get them to do it twice a week, you've severely reduced their risk. So I'm okay with incremental changes. And so I used to come on really, really strong and say, dude, you need to start doing this. But I've kind of gone more away from that, and I'm trying to do more nutritional stuff now. So every one of my patients gets nutritional counseling. I'm a bit of a crazy dentist. Not a lot of people agree with me on this. It still gets, I still get people in our industry who say I'm a little wacky, but look, I basically just ask the simple questions like, what's your diet like? What are you eating? Are you eating a bunch of carbs? Are you eating a bunch of simplified sugars? Are you, you know, what's your, like, are you eating vegetables? Here's a recommendation of some vegetables I recommend. Here's the serving sizes I recommend. You know, here's some things that are going to be good for your teeth. And so the point is it really, the first problem is really diet. If you have a patient that does all the right things, they have great hygiene, whatever, that's awesome. But if their diet sucks, they're still going to get disease. And that's kind of like, you know, that's kind of why people always come in there upset, because they have a cavity or something. And it's like, yeah, but I do a really good job of my hygiene. And it's like, yeah, but you're eating McDonald's 6 times a week. that's not going to help you, you know?
Right.
And so if you don't address the diet, that's one thing. And you know, like stuff like green tea, the primary antioxidant in blueberries is anthocyanins, have all shown really good data on being anti-plaque. You know, there's even some people that did research on a pomegranate rinse that didn't have sugar added, keyword no sugar added, that saw like plaque reductions of like 57%, you know, just having that once or twice a day. So the point is there are things that you can eat that are going to be good for you in terms of, you know, preventing plaque buildup and stuff like that. And the other thing, and you probably see this a lot, is a lot of Americans, well, probably Canadians too. The average American is on 3 medications. It's crazy. Okay.
It is crazy.
Every medication that you take after the next, increases your chance of having poor salivary flow by like an additional 20%. I don't know if that number is quantifiable really, but the point is patients who have 3 medications versus 5 medications, I noticed a huge difference. And sometimes they don't even have to be specifically dry mouth. Like they might not be on an SSRI. They might not be on a blood pressure pill. But the point is as you start stacking these additional medications, they start getting dry mouth. And dry mouth, without your saliva, you're going to get disease of some kind. And so, you know, I always try and look, believe it or not, and not to hate on any profession, but I feel like what patients do, and they don't realize it, is they'll go to multiple doctors, they get different medications, and those doctors don't end up communicating. And so there might be redundant medications. I've seen a lot of redundant medications of like someone's on, you know, 2 or 3 different SSRIs. And it's like, how did this happen? Like, how are you taking all these different medications? And then I'll end up calling the doctor, we'll get them off of it. And all of a sudden they don't have issues anymore. And it's like, man, we as a society, like I always joke, it's the hardest thing is for one doctor to talk to another doctor. Like it just never happens. Like you try and talk to people and it's just like, they're so busy and they won't call you back. And it's like, but yeah, no, it's a problem. So the medications are a thing. And then obviously the diet and then, you know, oral hygiene regimen, try and use things that, and my brand is very transparent about this. One of our core values is austerity. We really are big on simplicity. If you don't understand the ingredients and what's going into your, you know, rinse or toothpaste or whatever, that's a problem. So if it's got a list a mile long, just like foods, I'm sure you've seen this where you go to the grocery store and it's like, oh, wheat pasta. And then it's got 100 ingredients. And it's like, what is this? Like, is this some hybrid Frankenstein thing? Yeah. So always try and pick brands that make sense to you and don't have a ton of different active ingredients or ingredients at all. And just watch out for acidic stuff because you don't want to add, you know, extra acid unnecessarily to your hygiene regimen. So yeah, that would be all my recommendations right there. And my 30-second elevator pitch probably went a little bit too long, but yeah, that's what I definitely recommend.
Well, no, I really appreciate that. And it actually left me with one last question for you. This is so interesting. Is the question of fluoride. Because you're a researcher, this is a controversial topic. We have some cities that have fluoride in the water, others that don't. I look at the body as an integrative system, so I see evidence of fluoride being problematic in other systems in the body. What is your experience with fluoride? Is it necessary? Like, break that one down for us.
So this is interesting because I think there was a study done in 2015 where basically they compared a bunch of countries that had gone off fluoride in the water and countries that still had fluoride in the water, and the decay rates were approaching the same point. So basically, what does that mean? It means that one of two things, either that basically a lot of these studies that were done previously, maybe they need to be reexamined. But secondly, I think it's more that we have all these fluoridated toothpaste and topical agents that we're constantly using. And so it could just be that fluoridating the water, you know, in certain areas might not be as effective as we really want it to be. I'm not anti-fluoride, but I am pro-progress. And I tell people that and they get confused. What does that mean? It means that if you look at fluoride, right, especially if you're ingesting it, but if you look at fluoride and after about someone's 8 years old, ingesting fluoride shows no benefit, really. So basically your teeth are developed. And at that point, the only thing that's going to help you is topical. So it's really for the kids, if you think about it. There are some benefits, I guess, that you could argue, but it's such a low PPM in the water that, you know, topically, if you're just rinsing with it or swallowing, it's not really going to help. But there's this threshold level, right? And so we talk about threshold levels a lot, you know, in the microbiome, but fluoride only gives, even in a maximum situation, assuming everything goes correctly, only gives about a 25 to 30% reduction in risk for decay. And that's great, and I appreciate that. But I think that there's going to be better ways coming up that are going to show larger risk reductions than that. And I think so. I think you have to take it with a grain of salt. Is it effective? Yes. Does it work? Yes. do you think it's worth it to you is the question. And so I always tell patients, look, you have a choice, right? You can do what you want. And I never force anyone to do something that if they don't feel comfortable with it, I'm not going to tell them to do it, right? So I just say, look, just like any drug, there's upsides and downsides, right? And so you have to view it like that. You have to say to yourself, okay, so I get topical fluoride every 6 months on my teeth because I know it reduces the risks for cavities and things like that, but I don't have a fluoride rinse. I do use a fluoridated toothpaste, but I don't use it like every day. And so I just view it as something where I'm like, okay, from the perspective of oral health, I appreciate that there is a benefit, but I am not like, I'm not trying to overdo it. I don't know if that makes sense. So, like I said, I'm not anti-fluoride, but I'm pro-progress. And so I still recommend fluoridated things to patients. But, you know, as far as a systemic point of view, I mean, maybe you could comment on this, but what are some of the concerns that you get from patients that, you know, might be something for even someone like me to consider?
Yeah, I think there's concerns related to neurological implications of the fluoride, right. Disruption to the microbiome. I think when we're starting to look at and have the capacity to understand various SNPs, when we're starting to look at genetics, we're finding some populations are doing better. Some are doing worse with fluoride. But I think the science, you know, and the level of concern is sufficient that, you know, public health policies of just completely fluoridating a population. I think
it's a big choice.
Right. Yeah, yeah. I think, you know, that is a lot of power to put in the hands of government without what I would say is like overwhelming evidence that this is changing public health outcomes. That's my take on fluoride.
No, I appreciate that. And I'll be honest with you. I think that in a way it kind of does take away the choice, right? I mean, even if you know there's a benefit, the question then becomes, is it a benefit for everyone? And, you know, you can kind of even get into this idea of fluorosis. So fluorosis is, again, white spot lesions, but they're typically when you'll see a patient present with like a lot of pitting and high risk for decay. That's when too much fluoride gets into somebody's system. And so what happens is that when the teeth develop, they actually have like a fluoride ratio that's way above normal and sometimes even as high as 50%, and their teeth just fall apart. And so there is downsides to having too much fluoride, which, you know, could be an argument against fluorosis depending on the area. But again, you know, it comes down to this argument really of what serves the most benefit for the most people, and are we violating their right to choose? And so, you know, I think it's obviously a very political topic. So, you know, just to be honest with you, I don't have the products that I make are calcium based products. I'm a firm believer in calcium for reducing, you know, risks for decay. And so I do not currently have any fluoridated products that I'm currently working on. Not to say that, like I said, I don't appreciate their use, but I've taken it in a different direction, and the reason why is not because of safety concerns, but because I'm seeing higher efficacy. So the stuff that I'm studying, I'm seeing better results. And that's really what it came down to for me. And again, that's why I always say I'm pro-progress. So I'm only going to use something that I think is going to give the best results for individuals. And again, so for some people's hygiene regimens, that would be including fluoride, but my product line doesn't currently have fluoride in it.
Yeah, and I really appreciate that perspective because I think we have a tendency in health to pick a camp and then we get hyper dogmatic about our camp, which I actually feel is like the antithesis of an effective scientific conversation.
Kind of a little bit biased, yeah.
Well, it's like, yeah, and the irony just screams at me, and yet we do it. It's like you're vegan or you're paleo and you're into fasting, and there's nothing in between. So I really value that that perspective on the conversation.
Our body is a series of interconnected systems. What is happening in one system puts pressure on another. We understand this intuitively, And yet the most powerful medical system in the world, Western medicine, continues to evaluate our health in individualized silos. We have assessments related to cardiovascular health, oncology, respirology, dermatology. We have individual silos of expertise. When we assess the body from a functional perspective in our practice, we want to understand not whether you are necessarily fine in all of these different systems, but whether or not they are functioning in an integrative manner in a way that moves you closer to optimal health. While there are lots of functional tests that we can do to be able to assess that, technology is enabling us to start to look at this thing on the basis of artificial intelligence through the aggregation of data. We do this in our practice using a tool called Living Matrix, and I want to make this assessment available to you. If you go to our new website, AnthropologyPerformanceLabs.com, on the front page, you will see an opportunity for you to opt in into your personalized functional medicine quiz. Completing this questionnaire will take approximately 40 minutes of your time, and when you're finished, we're going to prompt you to have an opportunity to sit down from someone on our medical team to review your individualized results. We are all on big missions. We are all trying to change the world. It's no longer sufficient for our health to simply be fine. For us to achieve what we want to do as badass women with a vision for how we can help the world, we need to move our health to a place of optimal. And I invite all of you the opportunity to see how close to that line you really are. Go to AnthropologyPerformanceLabs.com and do your quiz today.
I think this is a great place to transition the conversation into the second portion of the interview. And I call this part our KPIs or key performance indicators. So just like we would have them in our business, I believe that we have them in our health and in our lifestyle. So I've got six rapid fire questions for you related to this. Okay. Question one, do you have a consistent evening routine? And if so, can you share?
Well, me and my wife always take the dog for a walk in the park. That's typically our evening routine. Sometimes we get a coffee. Yeah, that's typically what we do. So yeah, I enjoy spending time with my little family of three. It's just me, my wife, and our little mini wiener dog. So
that's awesome.
We love each other. So yeah, it's a nice time. Yeah.
Fiction or nonfiction? What are you reading right now?
Okay. So I was reading some fiction and my wife was trying to get me to read more fiction, but I read a lot of like self-help books. I really like a lot of these books about just like being the best version of yourself, you know, teamwork and things like that. I've been really into that lately. So that's where I'm at with that.
Do you have a favorite?
I really like this book called, The One Thing, but I also have been reading a book called Essentialism. So they're both about like, time management and, again, trying to just not get so diluted in all the tasks that we try not to make the big task into a million problems for yourself. So, yeah, I really like that one. I'd recommend it if someone hasn't read it.
It's a great one. I vouch for that, too. What is the one thing you are most consistent with respect to your health?
I would probably say I'm really big on antioxidants, probably a little bit too much. I really like eating fruits and vegetables that I know are going to give me just tons of good minerals and antioxidants. So I think the most thing that I would eat that I'm a little bit too crazy on is blueberries. I really love blueberries. I can't get enough blueberries. I keep buying them and eating them, and I'm hoping that they keep me healthy for a long time.
What is something totally badass about you that people would not otherwise know?
In senior year of college, I didn't have to take I took one exam, set the curve, and I didn't have to take the rest of the class because I was so far outside of the deviation on the scores that I was basically told not to show up again.
That's amazing.
Yeah. So I don't know how badass that is, but it was an interesting, that doesn't happen very often, by the way. Don't try and do that.
No, every kid's dream though.
Yeah. So, it was a very easygoing semester after that.
That
was going to be a hard class. But yeah.
What do you do for fun or play?
I'm really, really nerdy. So I actually, believe it or not, I like collecting like Lego sets. So I have all these like stupid Lego sets lying around. And I also really like to read. So like I read a lot of, you know, a lot of books. You know, I even like listening to podcasts, The Curious, like I'm a really big fan actually. So, I probably spend a little bit too much time in between work just listening to podcasts on my way to work and back. And I always get so bummed when, like I'm home and I'm like, oh, I have to like wait till tomorrow morning to figure out what happened, you know?
I sometimes am sitting on my step listening or finishing up listening to whatever it is that I was doing before I go in. So I get that.
Sure. Yeah. I'm a big podcast person. I love all things podcasts. I can't get enough.
Well, so. And last question for you, entrepreneurism, are we born this way or do we learn to become entrepreneurs?
That's a good question. I think the drive definitely comes from the challenges that you experience in your life, right? I think that for me personally, I've always really embodied this idea that like you have to work hard in order to achieve your dreams, but there's also the passion behind it too. So you really have to know what you're passionate about and know why you're doing what you're doing. So I think it really stems from a function of purpose more than anything else. I think some people are just born go-getters. I mean, you can't deny it. Like there's some people that are just like, they wake up and they have fire in their soul and you just can't stop them. You know, you kind of have to get out of their way. I think it's a bit of both really. But I find that a lot of the challenges that I get presented with, they make me a better entrepreneur. So yeah, I think that's the best way to put it.
Well, I love those answers. And I know people are going to have more questions for you, just like I did. Where can people follow up to learn a little bit more about what you're up to?
Yeah, I'm pretty interactive on my Instagram page, more so than anything else. I'm at Ryan Nolan DMD. We also have our podcast, The Biofilm Factor. So it's like at The Biofilm Factor on Instagram. And so like a lot of people are surprised, but like if you message me and you're just like, I have a guy recently messaged me saying, oh, like, hey, I have this going on with my hygiene. Like, what do you think? And then I gave him like a really detailed answer and he's like, oh, wow, I didn't expect you to take the time to actually answer me, but thank you so much. But like the point is, I'm very interactive. I frequently make posts about different products and tips and tricks for kind of getting your hygiene where you need it to be, and diet stuff as well. So if that's something that you're interested in, definitely stop by my page Like I said, we're launching some of our product lines here soon. So keep an eye out and we'll probably do some giveaways. So
amazing. How exciting, Ryan. This was a really fabulous interview. I learned a ton. I was like super into it. I really appreciate your time and we'll make sure everyone is linked up in our show notes awesome. With all the resources that you provided. So thanks so much.
Hey, thanks again, Dr. Walker. I really appreciate you having me on. And it was a blast to be here. So we look forward to having you on our show. So come on over.
Amazing.
If you enjoyed our conversation and would like to hear more, head on over to Stitcher or iTunes and subscribe to the Entrepology Podcast. We would also really appreciate a quick review. When people have their health, they can change the world. Let us keep you healthy and you go change the world.